Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels at BlakeRadio.com. And tonight's topic is kidnapped. Could you be paying ransom to your kidnappers in advance? And this is absolutely shocking. What prompted me to do this show on kidnapping is there was a story about Boston Children's Hospital that kidnaps a teenage girl for 10 months and holds her as a prisoner. And I said, well, of course, that's not a good thing. And then the writer goes on to say that this is really bizarre and disturbing. I'm like, no, it's not. Hospitals always kidnap people, especially children. And in this particular case, of course, to the lay person who hasn't gone to medical school, you would say, this is really shocking because the hospital says explicitly there's nothing wrong with this girl. She's perfectly healthy, yet they've detained her for 10 months. And how could this be? And I would say this is a classical case of kidnapping. In other words, you have in this case, an institution, but it could be an individual or a group of individuals, restraining a person against their will in exchange for payment. That's important. Most kidnappers have an objective, and the objective is usually to get paid. In other words, the hospital would in no way be doing this if they did not get paid. I worked at a hospital in administrative capacity as well as a medical capacity, and the patients are very closely monitored by the upstairs administrative office, and as soon as it looks like somebody's insurance is running out or it looks like the hospital's not going to get paid, the person is mysteriously declared well and discharged. There's even a scandalous case, I believe it was in Arizona. This is a long time ago, 20 years ago. Yes, I'm no spring chicken. A hospital is actually dumping patients on the lawn of a city park because their insurance had run out. Am I saying this because I'm saying hospitals are bad people? No. What I am saying is hospitals are not likely to keep someone in the hospital for 10 months unless they know absolutely for certain sure that they're going to get paid. Now, how does this hospital know it's going to get paid? There's only two ways. One, they've already assessed the parent's assets before the child was even admitted. That's number one. Number two, there's a government program in place that will pay them when they restrain people and abduct them against their will. So a payment mechanism in place. You have a hapless victim here, which is a minor. They're always fair game for kidnapping. And even better, you have a legal system in place that enforces it. That would be child protective. And how you can help protect a healthy child from being healthy is, that would be a question, wouldn't it? But I'm getting ahead of myself. First thing is to get a grip and understand what is kidnapping. Kidnapping has many definitions, so we're going to take two of them. In criminal law, I'm going to say criminal law because this really is a crime. It really is a crime to, against somebody's will, hold them and restrain them in exchange for money, really in exchange for anything. And so a person against a person's will, usually to hold the person in false imprisonment, in a confinement without legal authority, this may be done for ransom or in furtherance of another crime. And now they go into more detail in England. And so in England they say, and it's kind of transferable to U.S. law as well, there's four ingredients. One, taking or carrying away of one person by another. Check. Got that. Person's in the hospital. They want to leave. They're being prevented from leaving. Got the first one done. By force or fraud. By force, we see this in the hospital all the time. When I was a patient, I was a doctor, it really bothered me to walk into hospital rooms and you see these adults, these are people usually over 65, who are tied to their beds with restraints. That would be by force. Or by fraud. And that also bothered me, because here I am, medical resident, person comes into the emergency room, I can see there's nothing wrong with this person, but senior doctor says to the person, we're going to have to admit you, this is very serious, it might be a heart attack. Heart attacks can often be silent. We're going to admit you, we're going to strip you of all your clothes, we're going to hook you up to a bunch of very uncomfortable things and beep all night long and keep you awake. And we'll do this for several days and charge your insurance company, well, a pretty sum, but you're worth it, aren't you? So here this person is totally blindsided by this, not realizing he's being defrauded, that what he's being told is absolutely does not suggest that his health would be worse off if he just turned around and went home. It does not mean that what's going to be done at the hospital is of medical benefit to him or will in any way improve his health. So this is fraud. Now, is it medically necessary? Of course it's medically necessary. It's a standard of care. But is it beneficial to the patient? Of course not. And that's where the fraud is because the person believes this is going to benefit him when actually there's no chance. And then the third piece, so we've got force or fraud, so you're going to take someone away, check. Do it by force or fraud, check. Without the consent of the person so taken or carried away. Now, if a person is defrauded, then their consent is not valid. This is a very important piece of law. So if I say to you, you must have this surgery or you will die sooner, say in the next 3 to 5 days. If I know that that's not true, but you don't know that, and you submit to the surgery, I have, in essence, defrauded you. And I have actually really kidnapped you. I have, against your will, because you're like, Doc, I don't really want to do this. Oh, this is really necessary. Against your will, detained you in the hospital, subjected you to, we call it torture, which would be the surgery, in exchange for money. Now, obviously, the hospital, why are they allowed to go on? Because, of course, the person's insured. Doctors who admit uninsured patients are reprimanded by the hospital. They're taken aside, the hospital talks to them, says, hey, you know, you're not really helping the cause here. And when I was in practice, the hospital even go so far as to suggest that if you wanted to admit a non-paying patient, you had to admit a certain number of paying patients and show the hospital that you're really financially, you know, helping them and supporting them. So, and without lawful excuse. Now, lawful excuse is tricky. It turns out that hospitals do have lawful excuse to detain people against their will. And the lawful excuse is if the hospital / its staff believes that letting the person leave the house, hospital, would represent a threat to the health of that individual or a danger to society, in the case of a psychiatric patient, then that would give lawful excuse. Now, this belief is a very fuzzy period area, because if a doctor has seen this type of situation, say, 20 times before, and each time it turned out to be nothing, that doctor might have reasonable cause to believe that there really is nothing to be concerned about in this particular case. So we have in medical kidnapping all four elements here. There is no lawful excuse because the pretense of medical benefit is just that, a pretense on the part of really everybody involved, except the patient. The patient is usually deceived. The consent of the patient is not valid because the patient is lied to. This is committed by force, as in the elderly person tied to the hospital bed, or by fraud, as in informing the individual that they have some benefit to gain by being in the hospital, by submitting to uncomfortable, difficult, embarrassing, humiliating, torturous treatment, when actually there is no benefit in their particular case. And, of course, taking or carrying away of one person by another. In other words, a second person involved, the patient doesn't do this all by themselves. So how did this come about, you know, this whole idea of kidnapping? It turns out that kidnapping in the United States is actually a very big business. I had no idea. In 2010, the United States ranked the sixth in the world for kidnapping for ransom. This is according to the statistics. So only Colombia, Italy, Lebanon, Peru, and the Philippines are ahead of the United States in kidnapping. I found that for a peaceful, advanced, first world country to have this degree of kidnapping, I think is shocking. But at any rate, I digress. The point is, a lot of kidnapping going on in the United States. It's a big deal. Why is it that people believe that kidnapping doesn't happen in the United States? And this shocked me, that the same article on the Internet that said kidnapping, you know, the United States were number six in the world for kidnapping, also said, but you know what? It can't happen here. It can't happen in the United States. Why? Number one, the extreme logistics and challenges involved in successfully exchanging the money for the return of the victim without being apprehended or surveilled. So it's extremely difficult to successfully get the money for kidnapping. And this brings up a big point, is that money is a huge, huge motive in kidnapping. So if you can take the profit out of kidnapping, you'll greatly reduce the frequency of kidnapping. So successfully exchanging money for the return of the victim is an issue. We're going to see how the medical system has overcome all of these obstacles. Next is harsh punishment. Convicted kidnappers face lengthy prison terms. So if a victim is brought across state lines, federal charges can be laid as well. Hospitals don't have that to worry about because most of their victims are from the same state. Also, there's good cooperation and information sharing between law enforcement agencies, and there's a lot of tools for spreading information to the public, like the Amber Alert system. Okay, so kidnapping in the United States has always been huge, huge. We can take this back to 1801. He wrote a book about kidnapping. And in this case, it involved African Americans, but as all of you listeners know, it's not about the color of your skin. It can happen to anyone. But in the early 1800s, kidnapping was the greatest fear of blacks. And it didn't matter if they had generations of free people or whatever. They had a constant threat of being kidnapped and returning to being a slave. Why was this? This was because there was a huge amount of money to be made. And they were assured high profits on the sale of their victims. And so this was actually the internal slave trade in the United States. And so this is an important concept that, you know, greed was the motivation for the crime. They're saying racism helped to continue unabated, possibly. But this is the clincher here. Victims found it extremely difficult to regain their freedom through a legal system that reflected society's values in this area, that it was okay to kidnap free people. And this perpetuated, let's say this time they use the word racial, but I'm going to use the word cultural, double standard, and considered all blacks slaves until proven otherwise. In other words, in this case, we're going to consider all patients legitimate kidnap victims until proven otherwise. And it's okay to kidnap patients. So fortunate was the victim who received assistance, sometimes from government officials, most often from abolitionists. Frequently, however, the communities were forced to organize to protect their own, sometimes by working within the law, sometimes by meeting violence with violence. And mining newspaper accounts, memoirs, slave narratives, and court records and letters reflect this. And so there's a whole book written about this. And what I'm suggesting by reading this to you is not that blacks had a hard time. No, I'm suggesting that African Americans who were captured and taken into slavery for a huge profit, that patients in hospitals in large numbers are facing the exact same situation. And to free them is not easy. And it does often take tremendous legal firepower, like in the case of this Texas girl who was in prison for 10 months. Her parents brought her to the hospital because she was sick. The doctors decided that the parents were not doing what the doctors agreed with, even though they were doing what another set of doctors recommended. They seized the child, terminated the parents' rights, activated Child Protective, and kept the child in the hospital for 10 months, for which I believe the government will be paying, and discharged her to foster care. And so this is a lot that people are up against. When you go to the hospital for what you think is a reasonable medical affliction, it may turn into, and often does, turn into a kidnapping. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. I will take questions at the end of the program. And you can also hit me up on healingwithdrdaniels.chattango.com. I actually have the window open, and that's Daniels with an S. healingwithdrdaniels.chattango.com. Okay. All right. Now, in medical school, we were, as physicians, physicians in training, we were trained and prepared to kidnap people, especially children. I'll never forget taking pediatrics. And so, of course, I totally had the wrong impression of things, but here I was. I was very excited. Oh, my God, I'm studying pediatrics. I'm going to learn how to help all these parents be better parents and help their kids be strong and healthy. And so I was really super excited about pediatrics. However, in pediatrics, it was pointed out to us, leading cause of death in children was accidents. And as doctors, we needed to realize that this meant, whenever there's an accident, it meant that the parent was negligent. And therefore, the parent was the biggest threat to the safety of children. And we doctors needed to help parents with immunizing new children, teaching them how to bottle feed, and helping them keep their well baby appointments. I thought this was like seriously confusing, but I said, okay, I will keep listening. And so we were taught that doctor knows best, and that it's a shame that all these ignorant people in the United States are allowed to have children without first being certified by the government. And if there's a certification process the government was in charge of, where every person who wanted to have children had to first get certified in parenting, then this will be very beneficial. And, of course, the government should seize the children born to anyone who is not so certified. I thought that's pretty strong. So, of course, I was interested to know, well, how should children be raised? Do we know how children should be raised? Of course, I was pretty vague about that, and they somehow decided that since we were such educated individuals, doctors, of course, that we should be in charge of making these decisions. And so already the minds of us future doctors being cultivated to understand that it's okay to kidnap or seize children from their parents, because after all, the parents aren't even certified. Of course, we were all going through this big, long process to become certified, right? So that concept of certification of parents was, of course, very, very self-serving. And the other thing that came up was asthma. And a lot of asthmatic children had parents who smoked. And so, of course, by now, we medical students understood that parents were, of course, negligent. It was like, oh, my God. Well, if we can't take all children from their parents, well, couldn't we just take the asthmatic children from their smoking parents? And wouldn't that be better for the asthmatic children? And so the senior doctor said, well, yes, the children are worse off in a smoking household than a non-smoking household. However, it seems that they're better off in a smoking household than staying in a hospital where they would be, put this parenthesis, safe, end parenthesis. So, again, even though, again, subtly the doctor was trying to tell us kids, or students, medical students, that it's okay to abduct children from their parents. It's okay to seize them. But right now we don't really have, you know, it's like an attack dog. They're not giving us the okay to take every last kid. Not yet. Now, this was in 1980. So what was the big hesitation? Well, the big hesitation was the payment. There was no method at that point of guaranteed payment. There was a Medicaid program. That's a payment for poor families, you know, poor children and poor parents. But that wasn't that well expanded, and not every kid was covered by it, and the hospital had not negotiated sufficiently lucrative rates at that time. So while we had the means to declare that a child should be abducted, we had that, and we were encouraged that we should use it. In the future, we would need to use it more often. But there wasn't a payment mechanism in place, number one. Number two, Child Protective back in 1980 was not that well developed. And so we were being primed for abducting children, but we hadn't had that. The whole infrastructure was not yet in place. So what else happened in medical school in terms of kidnapping that I saw? Again, this is talking 1979 to 1983. Okay, so I'm in medical school, and I'm 24, 26 years old. And so at that age, you start getting the idea, hey, wait a minute, I'm kind of grown up here, and I can make a few decisions for myself, like whether to go to bed at 6 p.m. or 8 p.m., or, you know, you're just feeling a little independence there. And so I felt at that time that anyone else who was 26 years old, which is what I was about, this is the middle of medical school, they should be able to make basic decisions about their life. All right, nothing fancy, but, you know, just little things like, you know, what to eat, where to live, stuff like that. Well, the next thing I saw really shocked me. Came to the hospital next day, it's a hospital rotation, and I found that poor people were being removed from the streets against their will, placed in the hospital, and every test under the sun was done. And once all the testing was done, the person was then deposited back onto the street. And, of course, the government was charged and paid the bill. I found this very interesting. So the question, of course, is why? How would this be kidnapping? First of all, fraud. The person was led to believe that losing some blood in the testing process and absorbing some x-rays was going to improve their health, when actually it wasn't. Not possible. And, of course, it filled some hospital beds, generated revenue. And so we have taking a person against their will with a ransom paid by the government. And so we had enough of a mechanism in place that now we could work on some higher-end kidnapping. Now, this kidnapping of these poor, hapless people, when I say poor, I mean financially poor people, you know, we had some bumps here in the road, right? Not everybody was willing. Some became disruptive in the hospital, had to discharge them for bad discharge them basically for bad behavior. But this system was refined. We figured out, okay, what is it you have to say to people? How do you have to say it to get them more likely to say yes to what was really an abduction in exchange for the government money or government revenue? And so this is really honed down to a science. The point where I was working in a – actually, I was volunteering. I wasn't even working. I was volunteering. And this was a clinic, poverty clinic, middle of the ghetto. And it was evening after dark. And so I was just taking care of people who came in. And this one lady came in, and she was absolutely hysterical. I said, oh, my God, what's the matter? And she said, the problem is this. My child has ear infection after ear infection after ear infection. And I've tried to get care for him. I've tried, you know, to take him here and take him there. But I'm so poor, and I don't have any money, and they won't do this for me, and they won't do that for me. And I know he needs surgery, and on and on and on. And so she was so poor that she could only get, and she could only afford to get tubes in one of his ears. And so there I was in this emergency room with this hysterical woman who felt that this is what her child needed. What she didn't know, was that the research shows that when you put tubes in a kid's ear, that the ear that gets the tube today will heal better today, and the ear does not get the tube will hear better tomorrow. And so what she was begging for was literally for the abduction of her child to have this surgery, which was going to damage his future hearing, and of course hold him in the hospital under false pretenses. And so this is what you would call actually a success of the system, to get people to willingly submit to a form of kidnapping and ransoming. Again, you want to target the people whose ransom is already paid and guaranteed to be paid. So this is really, really interesting. Now, many of you listening may be familiar with more mundane events. For example, you may have a relative who goes to the hospital, they have a minor stroke. We'll call it TIA, transient ischemic attack, which means the person had a temporary loss of sensation, either in an arm or a leg, and by the time I got to the hospital, everything was fine, it was all done. And so at that point then, the hospital will say, wait, you need to stay about 4 days and get some testing done to make sure of whatever it is one needs to make sure of. And again, we have here at play false pretenses. You know, a person who's able to walk and talk is certainly able to pursue an evaluation as an outpatient. But again, we have a situation where a person believes, again, it's against their will because their personal judgment would be, hey, you know, I'd rather be out playing or doing whatever human beings do with their free time. But instead, under the pretense of assisting him, when really there's no assistance to be had, the person is incarcerated for usually 4 days is the amount, and insurance is billed, or even worse, awfully, insurance will at the last minute say, hey, we're not going to pay, and a person is stuck with the bill and loses all their assets. So it's a huge, huge, huge issue. And so the element of fraud is crucial. And I want to just go back to another incident of kidnapping. Now, in Germany, around 1939, there was a war going on, Second World War, and it was a frequent event to take children from other parts of Europe, move them to Germany, and for the purpose of basically putting them in hard labor camps, okay, there's the profit, is the profit from their labor for which they're not compensated, and to do medical experiments on them, often resulting in them being tortured or killed in the process, and, of course, the profits from the development of drugs that would be used on those who were not kidnapped. And so the history of kidnapping is really a long history, and it's always, always, always for profit. Okay, this, if people have questions, they can click their buttons, and I'll be taking questions in a few minutes. And so what has this got to do with what's going on today in the United States? Well, we have an entity, we'll call it, for the sake of discussion, a hospital, because everyone knows what a hospital is. And so this hospital is a huge financial concern, and this hospital then exerts influences over doctors who have been conditioned by medical school, conditioned to kidnap, conditioned to understand it's okay to hold a patient against their will because it's for the patient's own medical good, and they're following standard of care protocols written by patients, no, not by patients, written by hospitals for the hospital's financial good. And so a doctor admits a patient to the hospital, and then the patient says, hey, wait a minute, I don't think I want to be here. And the doctor says, well, I think you need to be here. You want to be healthy, don't you? And of course, it's a psychological association between being healthy and being in a hospital, and really it's just the opposite. And the person says, well, yeah, of course I want to be healthy. Oh, great, we'll take that as consent. And so again, we have consent obtained under fraud, someone kept against their will. Now, this is only done in cases, generally, in cases where the person has insurance. What would that insurance be? Government insurance, for sure. But even more so, or possibly more lucrative, is private insurance. And this is why when people come to the hospitals always insist, we need to see your insurance card. Why? That card gets swiped. And the computers go to work on that card, on that information, to determine if there's a diagnosis this person could be admitted for that their insurance company would pay for. If there is, then of course, this is a good kidnap candidate. And so the doctors, you know, is told, well, if this patient needs admission, there's nothing to worry about. This is a good one to admit. Doctor says, oh, okay. And so then once the doctor gets in, the patient gets admitted to the hospital then influences the doctor to order every test under the sun that the person's insurance card might pay for. Now, if you've been in the hospital, you've had tests done, they're not a piece of cake. They all involve a certain level of discomfort. And so this person then is being held against their will in exchange for financial gain. And so you have really a classical kidnapping going on. And most people fail to recognize it. Why? Because the fraudulent reasons that people are given for the necessity of hospitalization correlate with the fraudulent reasons that doctors are taught and the fraudulent practices of the hospitals themselves. So what is actually a fraud is then perceived as medically necessary and benevolent. But in the case of certainly Medicare patients, involves in 25% of them being harmed and a fair number of them being murdered, by Medicare's own count, 15,000 a year, which is more than the annual murder rate in the United States from all causes, guns included. So when does this happen? For example, if a person comes to the emergency room, once they come to emergency room for a bruised arm. They don't know, but maybe it's broken, maybe it's not. A blood test is done in the course of this bruised arm. A blood sugar of 138 is found. That's defined as diabetic, by the way, if the person is fasting. And then the person is induced / coerced to be admitted to the hospital for anywhere from 3 to 7 day stay to evaluate new onset diabetes. And so this is a sequence of events that goes on and on and on. And so new onset diabetes, hypertension, all of these things, people are being told that they need to be in the hospital, that this is going to have a beneficial effect on their health, which is actually implied, but not outright stated. The person is led to believe that. And they instead are actually being kidnapped for the medical care, or for the medical insurance payment. Now, what we've seen lately happening is the health system has become much more bold about this, especially in the case of children. When a child is brought to the hospital decides to keep the child, child protective is called, parental rights are terminated, and the government pays the hospital for the hospital stay, they pay the foster care. I mean, just the ka-ching, 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 just in all kinds of directions. So how can you prevent this? By not showing up. By not showing up and by really educating yourself in non-drug ways of handling your situations. Now that we have mandatory insurance, let's say Obamacare or the Affordable Health Care Act, we're going to see a lot more abductions, a lot more kidnappings, and some pretty pretty impressive payouts. We have a question here. Let's see. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, is this Dr. Daniels?
Yes, it is.
Hi, okay, so I'm online. My name is Michelle, and I guess what I initially called you for is to find out if we're able to re-record last week's show, because I didn't hear earlier. You know, I'm just chiming in about 10 minutes ago. And the fact I belong to, you know, your information system where you let us know what the next show is going to be, and my internet service has been usurping my information, and so I'm unable to find out whether or not that happened, you know, as far as the re-recording is concerned, or what the next show was going to be about, but I knew that you were going to be on today, so I put, you know, I chimed in, and there you were. But and also, the information that you're talking about now as far as kidnapping is concerned, I shouldn't be surprised, but it's really, I had a bout with diabetes. That's what they're calling, you know, and they kept me an extra long time. Now, I had gone to the hospital before for, you know, high blood sugar before I really started to say, hey, I need to change my ways, and they kept me about a week. And, you know, to, I guess, get my blood sugar regulated. Then they tried to write me about 10 prescriptions. All of them include Pepcid AC or whatever that stuff is. And so I'm leaving out with this gang of prescriptions and what you call it, Novolox or whatever that stuff is, the cloudy insulin stuff.
Yes.
Plus metformin.
Yes.
Well, I was smart enough to say after a couple of days on that stuff that this is not for me. There's something going on. Because, you know, they always tell you, don't stop taking your medication unless the doctor gives you permission. And I'm saying the doctor doesn't own me. So I stopped taking the stuff. Thank the Most High that I still, you know, I stopped taking it. And I don't have any of the, you know, the side effects that you were talking about as far as what they put in the Novolox. You were saying something about fecal matter at one time. But I'm really, really surprised at the brazen boldness at which they're coming at us now. It's kind of scary, but if you have some pre-information, you can kind of see them coming. So I just want to say I appreciate you, Doctor, and I'm glad that you were able to make it to another country that you can give us this information over here, because some of us were still here. And it's good to know that there are people out there who care enough to put their necks on the line to inform us. And
oh,
did you work with me to go ahead and re-record?
Excuse me?
Were you able to go ahead and re-record last week's
show?
Absolutely,
absolutely. It was recorded, and I've gotten feedback. It's crystal clear. It's at vitalitycapsules.com/turpentine.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Then I will definitely look that up. They've been usurping my page, saying that the website webpage is not available on your True Files link. And so, you know, we'll try a turpentine thing today and see what happens.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye.
Now, also, what happens is with web pages, there are so many recordings now on that web page, it has difficulty loading. So we had to put the recording for the turpentine on a different page all by itself. So the re-recording of last week's show, which was the Candida Cleaner Turpentine show, is at vitalitycapsules.com/turpentine. I'm also putting up a different website that will be dedicated to the radio shows, and we're finding a way so they can load more easily and be friendly for mobile devices. So that's in the works, and I'm doing that right now. And what the caller said is very important, is that you have to be prepared. You have to be prepared to find a solution to your medical conditions that does not involve the hospital. And for this, I have a free gift. I think many people have already gotten it, but if you don't have it, you should get it. It's at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. When you go to that page, there's an opt-in box in the upper right corner. If you put in your email address, then you will be sent a free report that tells you how to handle 10 common events, how to handle them without antibiotics, number one, and even several events that ordinarily you might have gone to the hospital for, how to handle them at home. So it's something that can easily save, one, save your life, but two, save you hundreds to thousands of dollars in copays. It's only a two-page report, but it can mean a lot in terms of saving you wear and tear and saving you from being kidnapped, because that's a very, very serious problem. And as the listener said, she was kept in the hospital for a full week, given a bunch of drugs. Thank goodness she had the wisdom to realize that these drugs had the potential to kill her, and she stopped taking them. People who would like information about a medical question or concern, they can send an email to support@vitalitycapsules.com, and Gabriel will put in the subject line discovery session, and Gabriel will get back to you with information about how to get my input if that's what you'd like. Now, the other thing about kidnapping is this is really overlooked. As I said, I talked earlier about the childhood population. That's people under, these are minors. And the law actually is very specific about this. People under 14 are automatically minors and not able to give their consent. So if you take and do anything to a 14-year-old against that 14-year-old's will, it's definitely kidnapping. Take them away. And even if they give consent, they're not allowed to. So kidnapping laws are actually very strict for people under 14. But the laws are contradicted by the actual practice. What is the actual practice? The actual practice is that because the rights of parents have been so diminished that is the easiest population to kidnap, is the minor population. To take a child for the hospital, to take a child away from a parent, often it requires nothing more than to say, oh, this child's not immunized. Well, that parent's negligent. We're going to take this child away. In my own medical practice, I had a Muslim family, and they were the Louis Farrakhan Muslims. There's all kinds of Muslims. These were Farrakhan Muslims. And they had somehow decided that they were not going to vaccinate. And they're going to see, they didn't have much money, so they're going to see, if they were going to the child's pediatric clinic at one of the teaching hospitals. And so they went to this clinic, and the doctor was very upset that they were not immunizing. And the doctor said, well, if you're not going to immunize, you need to stop breastfeeding and start feeding the baby with a cup. Of course, the baby was 4 months old, 5 months old. And if you know anything about babies, 5 month olds can't eat from a cup. They'll starve to death. And so, of course, the kid started losing weight. So I took the baby back to the doctor. The doctor said, well, you're obviously negligent parents. And, by the way, how about immunization? I said, well, no, we don't want to immunize. And so the doctor called Child Protective to have the baby seized. They sensed something was up and decided to come to my office to get another opinion. So I took a look at this obviously skinny baby. I said, well, what are you feeding her? I said, oh, we're feeding her with a cup. I said, well, you can't, this kid's not going to eat with a cup. Well, what about breastfeeding? I said, oh, well, yeah, we were breastfeeding. I said, well, you need to start back again. I said, well, how do I do this? And so I said, well, is it okay if I cut your breast? She says, well, yeah. So I'm going to squeeze them pretty hard, and I'm going to bring some milk down and see if we can't get something to feed this kid. And so I start at the top and give a pretty good squish, and thank God we got a nice little squirt. Had the kid latch on, I said, this is what you do. You have to drink at least a gallon of water every day and eat all the food you want. And keep your breast in your baby's mouth, one breast or another, at all times. And the baby gained about 4 ounces in the next 24 hours, which is a substantial amount of weight for a kid that size. The kid was pretty light. And so when they came back for their follow-up visit, there was a detective that called the office posing to be your friend. They had police that staked out the office. Of course, I didn't know. I was just inside practicing medicine. So the police had staked out the whole office. The parents couldn't bring the baby in because they were under surveillance. And so the minister brought the baby to the office, managed to get the baby weighed, and the baby, had gained weight. But as soon as he walked out of the front door of the office, he was seized by the police. The baby was snatched from him and taken to the teaching hospital. And this is a lot of firepower, you know. And this is the kind of firepower that the medical system has. And this is why it's so important to really minimize, I would even say eliminate, but minimize your contact with the healthcare system. At this point, there is no other option. I mean, when I first started this radio show, I would talk about, oh, medicine is dangerous, it's murderous, you know, if you engage the medical system, you know, it's going to kill you. But, you know, I have to say the only thing worse than being killed, of course, is being kidnapped, incarcerated, and tortured. I think that's a pretty tall penalty. And that's really what we're facing. And now that people are being compelled to pay health care premiums in advance, what is happening is this system is being financed in advance and literally becoming a humongous financial behemoth. Now, many people believe that healthcare is unaffordable, and that's why we need this big taxation insurance system. Well, if you think about it, it's really an oxymoron. It's not like we have rich people paying health insurance premiums so poor people can get care. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who are receiving the care paying higher and higher premiums. So all the money for the care is coming from these people who ostensibly can't afford it. So obviously people are able to afford health care. It's just that the hospitals want to grab more and more from them, and so now it's got the government to do it. And so now the elements of kidnapping are in place. You have an entity, the hospital, to commit the kidnapping, the abduction. You have the unwitting citizen who goes to the hospital seeking assistance, instead gets abducted. The hospital has a guaranteed payment mechanism in place, which is the insurance plan put in place by the Affordable Health Care Act. And you have the force of the police state, either in child protective services in the case of abducting children, and elder protection agencies in case of abducting the elderly. And it's becoming a roach motel where you can get in, but you can't get out. And so because the standard of care, those rules for admitting or unadmitting patients is written by hospitals, it's a stacked deck. It's very much a stacked deck. So what's the answer? The answer is educate yourself to other alternatives. The next thing is understand what's an emergency. If you think that you're going to live for even 10 minutes without the assistance of another human being, then I got news for you. It's not an emergency. And so what you need to do then is you need to educate yourself about that. And people who are interested can send an email to support@vitalitycapsules.com and put in the subject line natural healing primer. So I'm going to be starting a monthly hot sheet letting people know about natural interventions as well as medical interventions. When I say medical interventions, I mean medical kidnap traps. So you can avoid the traps of these pseudo public service misinformation campaigns that get you to unwittingly put yourself in harm's way at risk for being kidnapped. And so that email to Gabriel would be support@vitalitycapsules.com, and the subject line would be natural healing primer. So that's an educational program I'm starting to help people be able to take care of themselves and avoid these very real hazards. There are not any more questions, and I'll tell you about next week's show. Next week's show is super exciting. Next week's show is how a dose of capitalism could save the healthcare system. We have another question here. Hello? So how a dose of capitalism could save healthcare? Well, it turns out that capitalism has two pieces to it. One piece of capitalism, we always hear about, is laissez-faire, free market, let business do whatever it wants. The other piece of capitalism is laissez-faire, let the customer do what he wants. So we're going to talk about healthcare, and if we apply capitalism to healthcare, what would it look like? Okay, I have a question here. Let me see if I can... Hi, you're on the air?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello, Jennifer. This is Joseph Marcello. I am also a healer and very grateful for your intercession in our world. So thank you very much for your heroic efforts. I wanted to ask you, because of my own very great success with what Dr. Abram Hoffer, a Canadian psychiatrist, has termed the greatest substance for the human mind's healing, which is the niacin vitamin B3, which has a 50% effect of reducing death across the board from all conditions. I think probably because of its facilitation of circulation on a micro level throughout the body, but especially on the brain and the emotional system. And I wondered if you had any experience or whether this is off your radar screen.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I definitely have a radar screen. I'm very holistic food oriented about supplements. And niacin in that dose, 300 milligrams, is something that, you can get from food. What has happened in terms of modern society is the milling of flour and the milling of rice has resulted in the niacin being removed from rice, so white rice as an example, and white flour. So the removal of the niacin from these two substances has created a profound niacin deficiency. That would be one of the many B vitamins. The way I go about it is I just have people take B complex. That's the immediate remedy, the short-term fix. The long-term fix is to simply stop eating processed grains or foods of any kind. And the other thing that happens is a lot of foods have B vitamins in them, but because our foods are grown several thousand miles from where we live, then it's shipped, by the time it gets to where it's going, the B vitamins have dissipated. So I think that premature death is caused by a deficiency of many of the B vitamins. Folic acid is another one. People don't have enough. They just drop dead suddenly. And I personally believe this is the real cause of death among joggers and runners who do a lot of carb loading, a lot of loading with white spaghetti and pasta, things that are deficient in B vitamins, and then they end up with these severe B vitamin deficiency attacks. So that's the way I look at it, is that that's really what's going on there. And people can make a lifestyle change. Well, I mean, ideally they would make a lifestyle change, which would be to not eat any of the processed starches, and even maybe to eat more of the root starches so they can get nutrients and get minerals. And that's what I think the problem is. So again, next week, capitalism, how capitalism can save healthcare, actually save your life, and you know, prevent things like death and abduction. So send your questions to support at vitalitycapsules.com for next week, and we'll answer the questions on the air. And if you have any healing concerns that you'd like me to know about or assist you with, then support at vitalitycapsules.com. Subject line is discovery session. Okay, well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you this evening. And we'll see you next week.